America's oncologists will start using new guidelines in 2018 to describe the different stages of breast cancers. The new ranking will now focus on the DNA of the tumor itself when determining the severity of the disease. The doctors hope the new system will allow for more precise treatment and avoid unnecessary chemotherapy for some women. We're looking at the evolving care for breast cancer and the myths of the disease on this hour of the morning show. Carol DeSantis is a cancer epidemiologist and director of breast and gynecological cancer surveillance at the American Cancer Society. She's the lead author of the Breast Cancer Facts and Figures and Cancer Facts and Figures for African Americans publication that was recently quoted in the New York Times article titled Researchers Predict a Quarter Million New Cases of Breast Cancer in the U.S. Carol, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's start with that quarter million statistic, 250,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer for women this year. What do you make of that statistic?
Well, it is, you know, clearly a large number of women are diagnosed with breast cancer. The overall, the breast cancer rates are not increasing in the U.S., but the population of women is aging, or men and women, and the median age of diagnosis for breast cancer is 62. So as the population is aging, there are more women that are diagnosed with breast cancer.
And then 40,000 women are expected to die from the disease. How has that number changed over time?
Well, we do have some good news there. The death rate from breast cancer has dropped by nearly 40% over the last three decades.
What are we seeing in terms of the new cases from breast cancer in 2017? What is the profile of these 250,000 new cases?
Well, the data that we analyze are actually a few years behind. Mm-hmm. So the most recent data we have is for 2014 for new cases. But the majority of breast cancers are diagnosed at a local stage, and that's thanks to improvements in mammography and breast cancer screening, and more women are being screened. But there are some differences with different groups of women, some being less likely to be diagnosed early.
And who are the groups of women who are less likely to be diagnosed early?
Women that don't have insurance, or African-American women are actually quite a bit more likely to be diagnosed with advanced breast cancers. And some of a large part of that is the disproportionate burden of lower income and more poverty in the Black community.
And what about treatment for women of color? Does it differ from people, perhaps, you know, women who are white?
Well, so Black women are more likely to die from breast cancer despite having a lower risk of being diagnosed with breast cancer. And a large part of that is access to timely and high-quality medical care. But there also are some differences in the biology of breast cancer in Black women and white women.
So let's look at the tumors themselves for breast cancer. What are we seeing here with a diagnosis? What can we what do we know about these tumors?
So the majority of breast cancers are what are known as hormone receptor positive, and they can be treated with a drug hormone therapy such as tamoxifen. And that has really resulted in improved survival for women with this type of breast cancer. So that's the majority of all women are diagnosed with this type. There's another type called the triple negative breast cancer that don't have these hormone receptors and don't have any targeted therapy currently available, though there's a lot of research that is focused in this area. But these triple negative breast cancers are twice as common in Black women compared to white women. And these are more aggressive breast cancers. And as I said, that the treatment options are more limited for them.
And so why are they more are they more common among women of color?
That's a great question and a really active area of research. It seems that there's probably a genetic predisposition to these cancers as part of the reason, and then there may be other factors, differences in risk factors that also contribute to the higher risk of these aggressive tumors.
A statistic that resonates for many women is that 1 in 8 will be diagnosed with breast cancer. Is this 1 in 8 something that has held steady over time?
Over the last several decades, the risk has increased somewhat, and that is related to changes in underlying risk for breast cancer. Having more children, having them at earlier ages is associated with decreased risk. And as women postpone childbearing and have fewer children than they did, several decades ago, that has contributed to somewhat of an increased risk overall.
We're talking right now with Carol DeSantis. She is a cancer epidemiologist and director of breast and gynecological cancer surveillance at the American Cancer Society. She's the lead author of the Breast Cancer Facts and Figures. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Has breast cancer impacted your life? How has it changed your perspective, your outlook? Do you think about it often, or have you put it behind you? Are you a survivor? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carol, let's talk about managing the disease, managing breast cancer. What are the different strategies?
Well, there are a number of treatments for breast cancer. Treatments have vastly improved over the last couple of decades. The first line of treatment for breast cancer is surgery. Many breast cancers can be treated with breast-conserving surgery, which is also known as a lumpectomy, which is usually followed by radiation. And then mastectomy is the other option. Following that, some women receive chemotherapy. For the hormone receptor positive breast cancers, we have the hormone therapy that targets those estrogen and progesterone receptors. There are new targeted drugs that treat the HER2 positive breast cancers. I say new, they've been around since the 90s, but they've really advanced breast cancer treatment and contributed to improved survival for many women.
There was a trend toward surgery even without having signs of breast cancer among women who showed a greater risk of breast cancer. What do you think of that?
Well, I believe you're referring to surgery such as preventive mastectomy.
Yeah.
So before women are diagnosed, well, women at very, very high risk, that's like more than a 20% risk of breast cancer in their lifetime. These are usually women that have a genetic mutation in the BRCA1 or 2 genes that predispose, are associated with very high risk of breast cancer in one's lifetime, or if they've been treated, such as for Hodgkin lymphoma with radiation to the chest, these women with very high risk. Preventive mastectomy is, an option for these women, and certainly should be discussed thoroughly, the risks. There are some risks, as with any sort of major surgery, but it is an option to drastically lower, although not 100%, prevent future diagnosis of breast cancer.
And what might be some of the negative consequences of going right to having a mastectomy, going in a very aggressive route on it?
So as far as once a breast cancer is diagnosed, as I said, many women are eligible for breast-conserving surgery, which is the smaller, just removal of the tumor itself. There has been a trend towards more women choosing mastectomy over breast-conserving surgery, although The data show that the outcomes are equivalent for most women, that are eligible for these surgeries. The outcomes are equivalent with the more conservative surgery.
We're going to come back for some more genetic testing for things like the BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene can help predict the likelihood of a person getting breast cancer. Then there's this whole new field of genomics, which is looking at how the genes in the tumor are working and interacting with other genes. That's also a growing area of breast cancer research that we'll be discussing. It can help determine whether the cancer will come back. We're discussing this latest knowledge out there about breast cancer, and also going to be doing some myth busting with Carol DeSantis. She's a cancer epidemiologist and director of breast and gynecological cancer surveillance at the American Cancer Society. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How has breast cancer impacted your life? We'll be back right after this news update. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in American women except for skin cancers. Researchers at the American Cancer Society estimate that there will be about 252,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer in women nationwide this year. Some 40,000 will die from the disease. A woman here in the U.S. will have a 1 in 8 chance of getting breast cancer. These are the statistics. We're digging deeper into the latest knowledge about breast cancer, the treatment protocols today with Carol DeSantis. She is a cancer epidemiologist and director of breast and gynecological cancer surveillance at the American Cancer Society. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Has breast cancer impacted your life? Are you a survivor? Maybe you're battling the disease right now. What advice do you have for people in treatment? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carol, let's look at gene testing here for a moment. We've heard about the BRCA1, BRCA2. What do genes and knowing more about genes have to do with treating breast cancer?
Well, so women that have the BRCA1 or 2 mutation are at considerably higher risk for breast cancer. And then there are also, we have the ability to look at the genetics of once a breast cancer is diagnosed, that is increasingly being able to personalize the treatment based on the actual genetic profile of the breast cancer itself. Really improving the outcomes for some of these breast cancers.
Is that pretty common now that we're able to specialize a woman's treatment based on the tumor itself, or is that happening just in certain parts of the country?
Well, I mean, we're increasingly drilling down and understanding that breast cancer is a very heterogeneous disease. There really is not. When we say breast cancer, we talk about it like it's one disease, but there are really many different types of breast cancer. So, that information is widely available, and all women are able to find out, more specifically what type of breast cancer they have. As far as the complete, genetic profiling of a breast tumor, that's more being done in research settings to increasingly personalize breast cancer treatment.
Let's take a call now at 800-642-1234. We have Mark in Augusta. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would put a small foundation on this conversation, but one of the more depressing stories that I saw in the media was two women that weighed about 300 pounds, and one was the aunt and one was the mother. And they had convinced a woman about 16, who probably weighed 250 pounds, to have her breast cut off because they were pretty sure it was genetic in the family. And Michelle Obama presented some statistics that received just absolutely no traction in the media, that 10% of Americans run up 50% of the medical bills, and that these 10% were like drastically overweight.
Well, yeah, let's address that. What does weight perhaps have to do with breast cancer? Carol?
Well, weight does increase, you know, being overweight or obese does increase your risk of breast cancer in postmenopausal women. So a woman who is overweight, that's BMI between 25 and 29, are at 1.5 times increased risk compared to a woman that's in the normal weight range, and a woman who's obese is twice as likely to be diagnosed compared to women in the normal weight range. And this is for postmenopausal breast cancer. There's a little bit of a different relationship with breast cancer diagnosed before menopause. It's really the opposite relationship, where women who are overweight have a slightly lower risk of breast cancer.
Let's talk about some specifics in regards to Wisconsin, which is one of the states where we see the widest racial disparity among breast cancer mortality rates. Mm-hmm. What do we know about that? Why do you think this is the case?
Yeah, so breast cancer death rates are 60% higher in Black women compared to white women in Wisconsin. And as you said, that is one of the biggest differences in the U.S. There are only a couple states that are higher. So we don't know the reasons for sure, clearly. But just looking at some of the data, screening rates are quite a bit lower, mammography screening rates in Black women compared to white women in Wisconsin. The most recent mammography rate and Black women was 67% had received a mammogram in the past 2 years, compared to 75% of white women. So that, you know, and both of those numbers are, you know, not optimal. So that might be a contributing factor in Wisconsin.
And do we know how many women in Wisconsin are expected to be diagnosed with breast cancer this year?
Yeah, so our estimate for Wisconsin is that there will be 4,700 women diagnosed with invasive breast cancer, and in addition, 710 are expected to die from breast cancer this year.
When you look at the research going on, Carol, you look at where we've come in this journey in understanding breast cancer, what is ahead of us in understanding this disease?
So I think we've come really far in understanding breast cancer, improving treatment, which has resulted in improving survival. Many women are living, you know, for a long time. You know, breast cancer is not the deadly disease that it once was. But in my work, what I see is that not all women have benefited equally from these advances. You know, some women just don't have access to the quality of treatment that we have in the U.S. And I believe breast cancer treatment will continue to improve. You know, early diagnosis will continue to improve. Mammography is great, but we would like to have better screening to really understand, you know, which breast cancers are most fatal so they can be treated the most aggressively. And I do have concerns that, you know, as we get better and better, we just need to make sure that all women are able to access these improvements and benefit from the improved detection and treatment options for women with breast cancer.
Carol, thanks for being with us.
I've enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you for having me.
That was Carol DeSantis. She is a cancer epidemiologist and director of breast and gynecological cancer surveillance at the American Cancer Society, headquartered in Atlanta. DeSantis is the lead author of the Breast Cancer Facts and Figures and Cancer Facts and Figures for African American Publications. She was recently quoted in a New York Times article titled, "Researchers Predict 250,000 New Cases of Breast Cancer in the U.S. And we've been talking about the latest advancements in breast cancer treatment. Now we're going to bring in a new voice to the conversation. Dr. Lee Wilkie is the director of the UW Health Breast Center and associate professor of surgery at the Carbone Cancer Center, and she joins us from San Diego, California. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we were just talking with Carol about the statistics that we're seeing across the country nationally with over 250,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer in women this year. What do you think? What have you seen of the treatment breakthroughs that you're really excited about?
Well, I think there are many treatment breakthroughs in breast cancer. First of all, we have an improvement in detection, both by encouraging women to move forward with their screening, as well as improvements in how we do mammography and how we do follow-up to that mammography. So that's the first step in ensuring that we identify cancer at an earlier stage is through our screening mechanisms. And then there are many new options for minimally invasive surgery, as well as new treatments using novel drugs or pharmaceuticals that help improve the lives and reduce the toxicity associated with treatment of breast cancer.
Do you feel you have more tools in your toolbox, per se, than you did a decade ago?
Oh, certainly. One of the reasons I'm in San Diego is for one of our national meetings, though I work in Wisconsin. And at this meeting, we will learn about more and more tools to reduce the toxicity associated with treatment of breast cancer, but also find it earlier, as well as treat it more minimally invasively.
What is the toxicity issues that you're talking about here?
Oh, many women are worried about the diagnosis of breast cancer because of the use of items and drugs such as chemotherapy. And chemotherapy are certainly good drugs towards treating a cancer, but we want to minimize their effects on the patient and the long-term effects on the patient so that they don't have sequela of cancer many years after their diagnosis and treatment.
And then with cancer spreading to other organs, breast cancer perhaps spreading to other organs, how common is that? Once you find the cancer, how confident are you in able to get rid of it?
Well, I think one of the most important things we do when a woman presents with cancer is understanding the extent of her disease. And as was highlighted in this article, we find an increasing rate of women with what is called stage zero disease, or disease that is still contained within the anatomy or normal architecture of the breast. And as we find that cancer at earlier stages, we realize that sometimes those cancers don't progress to more regional cancers or cancers that know how to spread. And part of our job is figuring out how best to treat women with either localized disease or more regional disease.
And I'm sure you have to do a lot of educating in your job. What are some of the biggest myths that you see about breast cancer?
Oh, there are many myths about breast cancer, and I certainly don't know all of them, but there are many that include something as simple as a wire in a bra causes breast cancer, to the fact that when we operate on breast cancer, it'll spread. Those are two of the more common myths we will hear about, both of which are incorrect. And certainly operating or exposing a cancer to the air doesn't necessarily cause and doesn't cause a cancer to spread.
We're talking right now with Dr. Lee Wilkie. She is the director of the UW Health Breast Center and a professor of surgery at the Carbone Cancer Center. She's joining us from a conference in San Diego. You can join in this conversation about breast cancer at 800-642-1234. Are you a survivor? Maybe you're battling the disease right now. How about for family and friends trying to support a loved one? How has that road been? Do you work with people fighting cancer? What don't people unaffected by the disease, what don't they know? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Wilkie, there is this debate about when mammograms should begin. What do we know about mammograms?
Well, certainly we would ideally like to have a situation where we could personalize mammography just like we personalize the treatment for breast cancer. But we're not yet to the stage of knowing exactly who's at the greatest risk for breast cancer and who is not. And there are plenty of women without a family history of breast cancer who will get breast cancer. So currently, our best recommendations are to start mammographic screening at age 45 and continue that yearly to age 55, with a plan for either yearly or every other year after age 55 to an age that the woman is still expected to live for at least 5 years. Between the ages of 40 and 45, we certainly want the woman to talk to her primary care physician about the use of mammography and its benefits and decide if the risk-benefit ratio is one that she's willing to jump into and entertain and have a mammography at that age group.
Are there any differences among people of color or other races, non-Hispanic whites, non-Hispanic blacks, for mammograms?
Certainly, that's a very good question and one that needs further research and further investigation, because we do know there is a population of women who are non-Hispanic blacks who get breast cancer at an earlier age, earlier than age 40. And they get a type of cancer that is more aggressive. And using mammography in that age group, in that population, may be beneficial, though it hasn't been studied well enough to know at what age should we start mammography in that group.
Let's take a call now. Lori in Eau Claire. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Good morning. Hi. I am a cancer survivor, and I was diagnosed in 2016 with triple-negative breast cancer. And from what I understand, I really didn't fit the more common demographic of that, in that I'm 55 and Caucasian, Scandinavian background. And I came across the, like, four or five other women going through my treatment that were all kind of in that same situation. And I was just a little curious about that, if that's something that you guys are seeing a change in, or what that might be about.
Dr. Wilkie?
Certainly, triple-negative breast cancer, to define it for those listening, is a cancer that doesn't like hormones or estrogen or progesterone and doesn't have an extra marker called HER2. So because the three are negative, we call it a triple-negative cancer. It is a wide variety of women that can get that disease. It is not necessarily just a single demographic, though it is one of our more less frequent cancers. The more frequent cancers are estrogen positive. We see it in Caucasian women and can be associated with the BRCA1 mutation or the genetic abnormality called BRCA1. And that's one where we want to ensure that if a woman is diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, we understand their genetics and their genetic background.
And Lori, where are you in your treatment?
Oh, I am over a year treatment-free, and I was very fortunate. I was caught at stage one, no lymph node involvement, 16 rounds of chemo, a month's worth of radiation, and it's all good.
Dr. Wilkie, what about that treatment protocol? Pretty standard?
Yes, Lori, that sounds very standard, and congratulations on being on the other side of that year. It's certainly sometimes a very difficult one, and congratulations, and it was very appropriate for that type of cancer.
Racial disparities exist in breast cancer. The widest differences in breast cancer mortality between whites and blacks are in Wisconsin, Louisiana, Mississippi, and New Mexico. The narrowest gaps are in Minnesota, Iowa, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Delaware. Access to care, your economic status, your ability to get high-quality treatment early on in the diagnosis, these things all factor into the outcome. And it's what we're discussing this hour of the morning show. Dr. Lee Wilkie is with us. She's director of the UW Health Breast Center, professor of surgery at the Carbone Cancer Center. You can field a question, 800-642-1234. How has breast cancer impacted your life? Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page back after this news. When we look back through history, through time, breast cancer rates rose in the 1980s and 90s. Rates increased more slowly through the 1990s. There was a decrease in rates in 2002 and 2003, primarily in that of white women. Death rates from breast cancer have declined 39% from 1989 through 2015. We're discussing the latest knowledge, the latest treatments for breast cancer here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dr. Lee Wilkie stays with us. She's the director of the UW Health Breast Center and professor of surgery at the Carbone Cancer Center. You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234 with your comment or question about breast cancer. How has it affected your life? How has breast cancer changed your outlook? Do you think about it often, or have you put it behind you, your cancer diagnosis? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Rachel in Johnson Creek. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
So I was diagnosed last year, June 20th of 2016. My mammogram from the year prior was absolutely clean. I discovered the lump on my own. It was growing quickly. It hurts. I've worked in healthcare communications and marketing for a long time. In my mind, that should have been a cyst or some sort of a fibroid growth, something benign. Went to my surgeon. He took a sample from it, and sure enough, it is triple-negative breast cancer. It was already stage 3. That was after, like I said, a clean mammogram the year prior. Went through the basic chemos, the neoadjuvant chemos that happen, and it is chemo-resistant. It grew during that, so ended up having a unilateral mastectomy. Came back clear margins, clear nodes, needless to say, started radiation, and a new tumor grew in the remaining breast tissue that was up near my shoulder while I was going through radiation. Had another surgery to remove the rest of the breast tissue as well as the tumor. Went back into radiation with the doctors going ahead and pretending that I hadn't had already most of the radiation prior, and began capecitabine, Xeloda, which is an oral form of chemo as well. And guess what? I have a new growth. It grew right where I have had radiation, and it grew during chemotherapy, and it's now wrapped around my sternum and ribs. I am 43 years old, diagnosed when I was 42. I'm looking for what else is out there for triple-negative breast cancer.
So I think what you've been through is very harrowing and very difficult and hard to go through, especially at a young age. Triple negative breast cancer is one of our most difficult cancers to treat, and it seems at times to just want to keep coming back in the same location as you've aptly described. I think there are options available with newer drugs. Capecitabine certainly was, or the oral form of chemo was certainly a very important drug to take, but now there may be others that are helpful to help you treat this, what we call very locally recurrent triple negative breast cancer. We have several clinical trials looking at newer drugs trying to attack different forms of the triple negative breast cancer, and it would be important to get involved in a clinical trial looking at these more novel agents to try and treat what we now know are various different forms of triple negative breast cancer.
Rachel, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your story. We appreciate it. Let's go to Francisco in Sister Bay. Hi, Francisco.
Good morning to you.
Go ahead.
Yes, I have some observations about breast cancer. I'm Mexican, and I'm a male. And I found out that Chinese women do not have cancer, that cancer is a function of the American diet, and I believe also the European diet, that there is a cure for cancer, but that the researchers don't want it because they cannot put a patent on it, and that is soybeans. Soybeans uses the same process to kill in cancer that the pharmaceuticals are working on, and that is like concepts like angiogenesis, that it starves the cancer cell and kills it. But we are the world's greatest production of soybeans, over 62% of the world's production, but we have outlawed, seems, soybeans in America.
Well, let's get Dr. Wilkie to unpack that. What does nutrition have to do with cancer, diet, and this link with soybeans?
So I think that's a complex question. And unfortunately, women in China do get breast cancer. We have seen an increased incidence in the Asian countries in breast cancer recently. And it's multifactorial. There are many different reasons for cancers. There are some cancers that are probably nutrition sensitive and others that are not. Soybeans or soy products are somewhat of a plant estrogen, and so there is conflicting data on its benefits versus risk in women who have a hormone-sensitive breast cancer. One of the most important things to remember about cancer is there is a lot of interest in data in understanding both the environmental causes as well as the genetic causes and how the two interrelate. There are people who may be exposed to soy or may be exposed to another plant product that is good for them, but for others, it may not be good for them. So figuring out who can take certain nutritional avenues to help their breast, to help their cancer, and who can't is an important side of environmental and toxicology and genetics research.
Francisco, thanks for that. Let's go to Karen now in Freedom. Hi, Karen.
Hi. My question is, what is the role, if any, of antiperspirants in the development of breast cancer?
Another very important topic and sometimes one of the myths that we talk about. I think we don't fully know. There have been studies done in the past looking at the incidence of cancer and antiperspirants or deodorants. And there hasn't been a true link or a true linkage between the two, though I am sure that there are some women for whom it may not be good. But who those women are, it's the focus of, again, environmental research and environmental research into cancers and what causes a cancer or not.
Karen, thanks for the call. Let's go to Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
Doctor, I hope when you go out to the meeting, you can try and find out the connection between deep diaphragm breathing and shallow chest breathing. I teach speaking, and a lot of women do not breathe with their belly. They breathe with their chest, and they're cheating themselves 10, 20, 30% of the oxygen exchange when they breathe with every breath. And it's very important that does this help prevent cancer, or does it help alleviate the chemotherapy toxins?
I think we all need to take deep breaths, and it's important to realize that the taking care of your body and ensuring good exercise and movement and a good nutrition is important for taking care of yourself and hopefully helping prevent future cancer development by ensuring a good weight and a good diet. We should all eat our five fruits and vegetables and take deep breaths every day.
Tom, thanks. And let's now go to Doris in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Doris.
Hi there. I wanted to say that I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer in 1999. I had a mastectomy and chemotherapy. I was obese at the time, and my cancer was, I don't know if it's estrogen positive, but I have been cancer-free since then, so I've got 17, almost 18 years under my belt, and I guess I'm just so pleased. I've changed my diet, I've changed my health, and thus far that has contributed to what I think is the non-recurrence of it.
Dr. Lee, how common are these situations like Doris is explaining, beating the cancer?
Well, Doris, congratulations, and it's great to hear that you're that many years out from treatment. I think we are recognizing and understanding of the fact that as women age and increase their weight, they do increase their risk of breast cancer, and there is a lot of research in looking at the associations between obesity and or overweight and breast cancer. And improving your diet and your weight after a cancer diagnosis is likely to decrease the risk of recurrence, though it's not a certainty depending on the type of cancer that someone has had, but certainly has been shown to be beneficial in postmenopausal women.
Doris, thanks for calling in, and congratulations to you for sharing that, your success story. Dr. Lee, as we wrap up, what resources are available for women to seek guidance, if they have breast cancer or they're trying to go through the treatment, where should they look for guidance?
Well, I think there are many resources for breast cancer patients. One of the more standard resources is the NCI, or the National Cancer Institute's, website on cancer and breast cancer in particular. The University of Wisconsin, we have on our website for our breast cancer patients some information and important links to each of those different resources, such as those provided by the National Cancer Institute and those provided by the American Cancer Society, as well as the Komen Foundation.
And
one of the more important ones is looking at clinical trials and understanding what's new and available for patients through a simple website called clinicaltrials.gov.
And as we wrap up, what eye do you have on these new developments, these new ways to treat breast cancer? What makes you optimistic on any of these new treatments coming out?
Well, I think one of the most important is understanding that we are trying to improve our screening mechanisms and understanding who benefits from screening mammography versus newer technology. And then as we biopsy the cancers, really understanding the different mistakes and or mutations or changes inside those cancer cells so we can target those changes or molecular abnormalities with new drugs and new treatments.
Dr. Wilkie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. What a pleasure to be with you this morning.
That was Dr. Lee Wilkie. She is the director of the UW Health Breast Center and professor of surgery at the Carbone Cancer Center. Earlier this hour, we talked with Carol DeSantis. She's a cancer epidemiologist, and she is director of breast and gynecological cancer surveillance at the American Cancer Society. This hour of the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer and technical director this morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation is on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.